Okay, now for tonight's teaching, which I think is supposed to be on working with anger. Okay? So, did you get angry because I was late? Yeah? Okay, so let me give a definition of anger. So it's a mental factor. It's not a behavior. It's a mental factor that is based on exaggerating or projecting negative qualities, and because of that, not being able to endure whatever it is, and therefore wanting to clobber it or run away from it. So fight or flight. Okay? So, under this big heading of anger, there's all sorts of other emotions that range from, on the low end of the scale, annoyance, irritation, frustration, then going upwards, spite, belligerence, rebelliousness, outrage, enraged, wrath. We have lots of English words. Yeah. Animosity, hostility. Yeah. What are some more? Can you think of other ones?
Aversion. Hmm? Aversion.
Yeah. Aversion. Lots and lots of English words for our emotional feeling of not liking something. Okay. Now, let me ask you, when you're angry, hatred. Hatred goes in there too. We forgot that. When you're angry, do you feel like you're looking at something in an exaggerated way, or that you're projecting negative qualities that aren't there? Yeah?
No.
No. Yeah. Now, isn't that interesting? Because the definition of anger starts out with, projecting, or, qualities that aren't there, or exaggerating negative qualities. Yeah? But when we're angry, do we feel like we have that part of the definition? No. How do we feel? What do we think? I'm perceiving reality. Yeah? Yeah? When you're angry, don't you feel like there's a me in here and there's something out there? I am perceiving it 100% accurately. And for the benefit of all sentient beings, I want to destroy it. Yeah? Isn't that how you feel? Yeah? Do you ever say to yourself when you're angry or upset, I'm exaggerating? Never. I'm not exaggerating. I'm right. 100% right. There's no exaggeration. I'm seeing that person exactly as they are. Inconsiderate. Selfish. Rude. Uncaring. Obnoxious. And then a lot of beep beep words that we aren't supposed to say. Okay? And we think we're perceiving an objective reality. And yet, the definition is telling us that we're exaggerating. So there's something that doesn't match up in our self-image and the reality of what's happening. Yeah, because when we're angry, when you're angry, do you feel you have any responsibility in the situation? I don't. I have no responsibility. I'm sweet, innocent, benevolent, kind, good-natured, cooperative, and willing to compromise. Yeah? And I'm up against this person who is stubborn and hard-headed and impossible to talk to. And they exaggerate things so much, and they don't understand me, and they criticize me when I haven't done anything wrong, and blame me and falsely accuse me. And what did I do to deserve this? That's what my mother always used to say. Except she used to say, "What did I do to deserve you?" Sorry, Mom, that was your choice. But you know, it's so interesting, isn't it? You know, when we're angry, there's definitely exaggeration. But we're totally spaced out about it. We don't see it. We can't see it because we're so sure about being right. Hold your questions, please. If you can, I know that the energy is building up and you've got to ask. Cool it. Okay. We often confuse anger, which is an emotional, inside, mental event, with behavior, okay? The emotion of anger is different than the behavior that is done motivated by anger. Because we can have two very different behaviors motivated by anger. Just as we can have two very different behaviors motivated by compassion. Okay, so let's look at the anger first. Yeah. We usually associate anger with very loud, explosive behavior, don't we? Like we see in the movies, you know, they always have to have some kind of angry, you know, scene every so often. So that they either have to be kissing or they have to be fighting. Otherwise, you turn it off after a few minutes. Okay? So they always have to have something, you know, some big crisis point. Yeah. So we usually think of anger as this explosion, yelling, screaming, maybe throwing things, maybe punching somebody. Okay? But there's also, that's one behavior from anger. There's also another behavior from anger, okay? Which is we shut down, we withdraw, we don't communicate. We back off. The explosive anger is hot. The implosive anger is freezing cold. Yeah. We give somebody the cold shoulder. Yeah. We don't talk to them. Yeah. So how many of you are behave explosively most of the time when you're angry? Okay. How many of you behave chillingly when you're angry? How many of you alternate one and the other depending on the situation? Yeah, why be stuck on one when variety is the spice of life? You know? Okay. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because the explosive and the chilling behaviors are totally the opposite, but the anger can be the same. So that's why we say that the behavior is not the emotion. Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Yeah. So for this reason, I went by many years thinking I didn't have a problem with anger. Yeah. Because I didn't yell and scream. In my family, only mom was allowed to yell and scream. The rest of us, if you cherished your life. Anyway, you didn't quarrel with my mom if you knew what was good for you. Okay. So I thought I didn't have a problem with anger because I didn't yell and scream and throw things and stuff like that. Yeah. It took me quite a while to realize that actually, in fact, I had a big problem with anger. Because when I got angry, my behavior was the withdrawing, shutting down, pouting. You know pouting? No. Poor me. Yeah? I pout. Poor me. And feel sorry for myself. They don't understand me. They treat me so mean. They hurt my feelings. I feel so awful. Right? Right? Yeah. One of the inmates I correspond with, he calls it throwing a pity party. It's a good term, isn't it? Pity party. Yeah? You have a party to feel sorry for yourself. Yeah? And you invite no one, and no one shows up. And that makes you feel even worse. Because nobody loves you and nobody came to your pity party. Even though you didn't invite them. And even though some kind person, you know how when you really chill people out when you get really mad? You know how it is? You can feel the energy in the room. It is like so cold. You know? Just free. The same way if somebody's in the hot anger, you can feel the heat in the room. Yeah, you're ready for the explosion. Yeah. But the same with the cold. It's so cold. You know? So withdrawn, so hard. But we don't see it that way when we're having a pity party. We see it as untender, thoughtful, very sensitive me. And all these people are so inconsiderate. I mean, I really try so hard. And they don't understand me. Yeah. And then every once in a while, somebody will come along and say, oh dear, you look really upset, you know. Is something the matter? Can I help you? And then, with great pride, you go, no, I'm fine. I'm fine, really. Just leave me alone. And then they leave us alone, and we go, see, they don't care. True or not true?
True?
It's true, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the behavior is not the emotion. Similarly, with compassion, which is the opposite of anger, sometimes we can have very passive behavior. And just, you know, be very calm. Yeah. In slang, you call it chill out. But it doesn't mean being chilly with anger. It's just chill out. Yeah, or sometimes with compassion, we can be extremely straightforward and assertive and pull no punches. Two opposite behaviors, but either one of them can be motivated by compassion. Because sometimes with compassion, we see the best thing to do is let the situation go. It'll fade by itself. Don't make a big deal out of it. Other times with compassion, we see that we have to act, and we have to act strongly and forcefully to get the point across to somebody else. Yeah. So compassion does not mean, you know, that you're passive in the world's doormat. Okay? Sometimes you can be very forceful. I remember one of my teachers. He had one of these personalities that just made everybody laugh, you know. But once in a while, he would get mad. And when he got, I don't think he was mad inside, but he showed that aspect on the outside. You woke up and you paid attention, yeah. And I remember one time he was saying all these things, and there were the old students in the room and the new students. The new students were laughing, you know, because what Lama was saying was just, it was funny. The old students, we knew what he meant. And he was not happy with us. Yeah. So different kinds of behavior in different situations, and people interpret the behavior differently. Okay. What else about anger? Now, before we can start getting a handle on our anger, we have to be able to recognize it, and we also have to be able to see its disadvantages. Okay? To be able to recognize it, yeah, we need to, you know, the best thing is if we can catch it when it's small. Because once the anger is really full-blown, very difficult to manage it. So we have to catch it when it's pretty small. How do you catch it when it's small? Yeah. You have to tune into yourself. You have to develop this capacity to, you know, what they call it, introspective awareness, of being aware of what is going on in your body and what's going on in your mind. Yeah, it's the opposite of being spaced out. Okay, you know spaced out?
Yeah.
So what's going on in our body as we're starting to get angry? Yeah, what kind of changes in your body do you feel with anger?
Tension.
Tension, yeah? Your muscles get tense. Hot. You get flushed.
The breathing changes.
Yeah, your breathing gets faster, doesn't it?
The pulse starts beating.
Yeah, your heart starts beating faster too. What else? How's your stomach feel? Knotted, doesn't it?
The thoughts changes also. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I'm getting to the thought. We're still on the body. Hold on. What's happening with your jaw when you're getting angry? It's clenched, isn't it? Okay. So if we can become aware of what's happening in our body, even when those things start and they're still very small, it gives us a head start advantage on identifying our anger when it's still small. Okay. Now, our mind. What changes in your mind do you notice when you're getting angry? Now!
What?
What? What? Yeah. So there's the mind becomes very kind of shocked. Yeah? It What else happens in your mind when you're starting?
Yeah? It gets very narrow.
Yeah, gets very narrow. I notice in my mind there's a certain kind of quality to my mind. I can't put it in words, you know, but a certain kind of flavor to the mind or feeling in the mind of discomfort. And as soon as I feel that, I know, uh-oh. Yeah, I better pay attention because I'm getting angry. Okay? So we need to really get to know ourselves and, you know, observe our thoughts, observe our moods, observe our body to gain information about how these things work so we can identify our anger when it's still small. So that's one thing that's very important. If we can't identify anger, we can't remedy it. We can't counteract it. It's like you can't clean a room if you can't see the dirt. Yeah. If you walk in the room and all the dirt's under the carpet, you say it's clean. And then you can't understand why it smells so bad. Okay? So we gotta see it to be able to clean it up. Then we have to know, we have to very clearly see what are the disadvantages of anger. So what do you see are disadvantages of anger? Yeah?
You don't want the situation to be solved. Sometimes I don't want the situation to be solved.
Ah, interesting. Sometimes when we're angry, we really don't want a resolution to the situation. We enjoy conflict. Yeah? We get a real buzz out of fighting with somebody. Yeah?
Because he's an asshole.
What?
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah, of course. But look at our mind, you know? We just get such a high from the adrenaline out of fighting with somebody. Yeah. I once was trying to do a project with somebody, one of these people who liked to quarrel. He really did, you know? He just enjoyed it. And I'm not particularly fond of quarreling. So we had some problems working together, you know, because he would start to fight and he would like really get into it and I would withdraw. Yeah, and that would make him even madder and want to fight more, which would make me just walk away from the situation. Yeah, we had a good time together. Yeah, that project didn't last so long. Okay. Yeah. But when you're angry, are you happy? No. So is anger conducive for human happiness? No.
But you can feel alive.
You feel alive.
Yeah.
Because you have lots of adrenaline. Yeah. You feel very alive.
It's like entertainment.
It can become like entertainment. Yeah. If you watch, I don't know what the media is like here, you know, but the news in the US is like entertainment. Because, like with the election, people aren't talking about the issues. They're talking about how the different candidates are insulting each other and calling each other names. Yeah. It's outrageous. Yeah. But it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm. I had a colleague once, and she could explode, and she did it very often. Mm-hmm. I'm in an old people's home, and the old people there, and the colleagues, she got aroused. And one day she admitted that when she had planted all this rouse and anger and explosions all around, afterwards, she had become quiet inside, and then she was feeling good.
Yeah, so sometimes when people explode, they feel good afterwards simply because they got the negative energy out. But later on, when they think about what they did, then they don't feel so good. Yeah? Because how do you speak when you're angry? Yeah. Yeah. When we're angry, we say and do things to the people we love the most that are incredibly painful. Yeah? So there may be somebody we care a great deal about. When we get angry, we treat that person like garbage. Yeah? We break the trust. We say all sorts of horrible things to them. And then, at later, when we're calmed down, we look and we go, oh my goodness, what in the world did I say? Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Said something when you've been angry and afterwards. We say and do things that are just off the wall, that break the trust, you know, and we spend a long time. It takes a long time to create trust, doesn't it? And very little time to destroy it. So that's a big disadvantage of anger, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Do you feel good about yourself after you've gotten angry? No. Yeah. So anger isn't very good for self-esteem either. Afterwards, we usually go, you know, and we feel quite ashamed of ourselves, quite bad for the way we've acted or for what we've said. And yet it's so difficult to apologize, isn't it?
So you also can feel anger through yourself because the other people, maybe you can't, they can persuade you to do something you don't want and you are not able to say no or go outside. Therefore, mm-hmm. the anger turns to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We get angry at ourselves for many reasons, you know. One is when we let ourselves be talked into something. But another is when we've acted in a way whereby we don't respect ourselves. Yeah? Because we have to have a certain level of self-respect. And sometimes when these afflictive emotions take over in our mind, we say and do things that make us feel we lose our self-respect. Yeah. So the reason I'm pointing these things out is so that people will become very convinced that anger is not something that we want to enrich and enhance. Okay? And I say this because I've been in certain situations. Like one time, I was at a university, and there they had some of the professors in the Department of Communication and Conflict Resolution. They asked me to give a talk, and I was talking about the disadvantages of, you know, I was talking about anger, and talking about the disadvantages of anger, and they got really mad at me. Because they said, anger is good. Anger tells you that something is wrong, that something is amiss. Yeah, these are people who want to resolve conflicts. They're well-meaning people saying, anger is good.
But I agree with them.
Well, you're wrong because you disagree with me. And I'm always right. Yeah, you need to learn that. Okay? But if we look, yeah, there's so many problems with anger. And then people always say, but what about when one person is harming another? And what about when there's social injustice? Is this what you're thinking? Therefore, anger is good. Yeah. But I always say in response, is anger the only thing that can activate you to do something when there's social injustice or to intercede when one person is harming another? Do you have to be angry? No. Anger is not necessary for that. Yeah. And here, I think it's very helpful to look at His Holiness the Dalai Lama and his way of handling the whole situation with Tibet, you know, because he became a refugee at age 24. And then, you know, there's been environmental destruction in his homeland. There's been horrible things happening to his people. The culture has been devastated. Yeah. And yet, His Holiness tells the Tibetans, don't be angry at the communist Chinese. Yeah. Most of us would be furious, wouldn't we? He says, don't be angry. It's interesting, isn't it? But does that mean that His Holiness is totally passive in confront of what's happening in Tibet? No, he's not passive. He's extremely active and straightforward. But he's not angry. And so that's the thing, that when we're angry, yeah, we don't think clearly. And so how we communicate usually isn't effective, and our ideas for remedying the situation usually don't work very well because we're not thinking so clearly when we're angry. If we can be calm, if we can have an attitude of compassion that extends to both sides of the conflict, then there's a greater chance of us coming up with a solution that will help the situation instead of inflame it. Okay. So, we're out of time. We could have a couple of questions, and then tomorrow and the next day we'll be talking about living with an open heart. And so the topic of anger will come up then, and so we can discuss it more then. In the meantime, you can be mad at me for not finishing. Yes?
Venerable, can I just ask, how is compassion the opposite of anger?
How is compassion?
The opposite.
Not?
The opposite.
Because compassion wishes, compassion is the wish for somebody to be free of suffering, to be free of pain. That's all compassion is. Anger wants to inflict pain. Okay, make some sense? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes hatred and anger is caused by parents. For example, if mm-hmm. the children are mistreated or abused or something, it often gives a lot of anger in mm-hmm. their mind. And also, if you see, for example, how you make an angry dog is by mistreating it, you know. And sometimes these feelings of anger could be based upon some experiences in our life mm-hmm. that somebody had hurt us.
Yeah.
How do we work with these feelings?
Okay. So how do we work with anger that is based on having had a previous experience in which we responded with anger? I think it's important, if you can, to identify the experience and then to ask yourself, why do I have to be angry at that, about that? You know? Okay, maybe somebody slugged me. Maybe somebody abused me. why do I have to be angry? Because sometimes with our emotions, we think that in certain situations, there's only one possible emotion to have. But that's not true. Yeah. So it's very interesting. I find that very helpful as an antidote to anger. When I'm angry, to say, well, why are you angry? I have these little talks with myself. Why are you angry? Yeah. Well, he said, yeah, he said that, but why do you have to be angry about it? Well, she said, yeah, okay, she did that. Why do you have to be angry at it? And I keep questioning, you know, why am I really angry? And sometimes at the bottom, what I find is maybe I'm holding on to a certain value, or I'm holding on to a possession or an idea or an ideal. And because of being attached and clinging onto something, then I get angry when that doesn't happen. Or when somebody doesn't accept my idea. Because remember, I want what I want when I want it. So when that gets frustrated, anger comes.
Do you think it's connected to that we have some very, very deep-rooted, like, cultural and language-based ideas about how things are supposed to be and when they're not that way, when it clashes?
A lot of our anger, is based on having expectations, and those expectations aren't being met. Of course, the other people may not know that we expected those things of them. Yeah? We just assume they know. Yeah? But maybe they never signed up to do what we have them signed up to do. Yeah? And so we get angry because it's not happening the way we want and we can't control it. Yeah. Behind anger, there's attachment and expectations that aren't being met. Sometimes there's hurt, which again is related to attachment. We have some attachment to who we are, or attachment to how we want the relationship to be, and somebody doesn't act that way, so we feel very hurt. Sometimes behind anger there's fear, because our mind is making up some extreme situation and then being afraid. So there's lots of things that can lie behind anger. It's very interesting if we can try and discern, you know, what is lying behind the anger and then resolve that issue. Okay? Because that often helps to resolve the anger. Yeah?
Venerable, how is it connected with karma then?
With karma? Because anger creates karma. Okay? Anger is an affliction. From afflictions come karma. Karma means actions. Okay? The actions leave seeds in our mental continuum, and when those seeds ripen, they influence what we experience. Okay?
Can you talk about how to be assertive with compassion instead of becoming angry?
Yeah, so how to be assertive with compassion instead of with anger. First, you have to really get yourself out of the anger. Yeah? So sometimes it really means, you know, I need a time out. So not only do kids need time out, grown-ups need time out, you know? And we need a time out to sit there and work with our own mind and apply the antidotes and get ourselves so we can see the situation in a more equal-minded way. When we do that, then we can start to think, okay, what would be helpful in this situation to do? Yeah? And so sometimes it seems like, oh, gee, what would be helpful is maybe I have to point something out to somebody in a very straightforward way. You know, I can do that now because I'm not angry. Yeah. But I have to point it out straightforwardly, but in a way so that the person gets that I'm not trying to put them down or hurt them. Yeah. And sometimes we need to say that. We need to say, you know, I'm going to speak frankly and it's because I care. Sometimes we may look at the situation and decide that actually speaking frankly is not going to be the most skillful thing because the person isn't ready to take it in yet. So maybe you have to approach the situation in another way for a while. Okay. This was the last question. Yeah?
What is the most efficient antidote you can mention to if you hate yourself? It is so difficult to show compassion to yourself.
Okay, an antidote to show compassion to yourself. I think you just said it. Yeah? To have some compassion, to wish yourself to be free of suffering. Yeah? Shouldn't we wish ourselves to be free of suffering? Yeah? It doesn't have to. It's not a selfish wish. Yeah? When we make a mistake, wouldn't it be nice to kind of forgive ourselves? Instead of pulling out the clubs and, I'm so bad, I'm so negative. Yeah? I'm a sentient being. Sentient beings make mistakes. I regret my mistake. I'm going to purify my mistake. I'm going to learn from my mistake. But it's senseless to beat myself up about my mistake because the mistake's over and done with. Yeah? So to have some kind of patient, tolerant, empathetic attitude towards ourselves instead of always, you know, being so tough on ourselves. So critical, you know? Give yourself a break sometimes. Yeah. I heard somebody say once, if we treated other people the way we talk to ourselves, we wouldn't have any friends. Yeah? Because sometimes, you know, our self-talk is so awful. But if we really look at the thoughts in this self-talk, we'll see that most of them are not true. Most of them are very extreme thoughts. Yeah. I'm a failure! That's a bit extreme, don't you think? Yeah? Do you fail at everything in your life? I'm sure you can boil water. I'm sure you can write your name. Yeah? We're not failures. Yeah? It's very extreme to say to ourselves, I'm a failure. Yeah? Or to say to ourselves, nobody loves me. Really? Nobody loves me? Nobody. Yeah? I don't think that's true. Even your dog loves you. Your cat loves you. Yeah? And unbeknownst to you, your parents love you. Yeah? Sometimes we can't see it. And sometimes they don't know how to show it. But they love us. Hmm? Sometimes there's a lot of love in the universe and we can't see it. Yeah? People say something nice to us, and instantly we're like this. No, I can't accept that compliment. Yeah? If you feel that there's something good about me, that means you're really dumb. It's really rather insulting to the other person. You know, when people say, I'm really fond of you, or I love you, or you have so many good qualities, and we go, no, because, you know, we feel so awful about ourselves. That's like saying to the other person, you're really a jerk. It's really not very polite. Yeah, somebody says something nice, we should say thank you. Yeah? Why not? They have a virtuous mind, we say thank you. Okay. Let's sit for a couple of minutes. And have our digestion meditation. So think about something you heard so that you can remember it later and apply it to your life. And let's rejoice that we were able to spend the evening together like this. And rejoice at the merit, the good karma, the positive energy that we all created. So really rejoice, feel good about what we all did together this evening. Then rejoice at all the goodness in the world, all the people helping others, all the people abandoning harm. And then think of that goodness as a light at your heart, in the center of your chest, and it radiates out to all the living beings everywhere, touching them and transforming their minds into wisdom and bodhicitta.